What's up, movie friends? Welcome back to Letterboxd Recap, where we go through the movies we've been watching this past week, as well as rating the Letterboxd top 4 of 5 of you listeners. Some of the movies James and I watched were Man of Steel, Trainspotting, Road to Perdition, Late Night with the Devil, The Trial, among many others.
Many others!
This is a big week of movies. I had a great time. I watched some really old films, because I watched a bunch of new movies back to back to back. Being Ricky Stenicki, Roadhouse, Late Night with the Devil. So then I wanted to watch like a bunch of old movies. So I did that to like
cleanse your palate.
Not so much cleanse the palate,
balance
but just,
your
palate.
Yeah,
balance it. Yeah, balance it out.
You need some salt and sweet.
Exactly.
You had a lot of this. You had a lot of candy, and you need a little something salty or some meat or some bread.
I do have a sweet tooth, but I do like that savory too.
Yeah, you have
the biggest sweet tooth of all time.
It's absurd how big my sweet tooth is, and sometimes I can't control it. It's like a monster inside of me.
And real quick, I want to shout out a bunch of our new patrons. Andrew, Shannon, Wendy, Anthony, and Jonathan just joined our Patreon in various tiers. Thanks to everybody for supporting the show.
Thank you so much.
It's awesome.
We love Patreon. To sign up at patreon.com/Raiders of the Lost Podcast. Anyone can do it. I can't wait to get into these watches because I was all over the place with mine as well as I saw something very cheesy but in the best way possible. And also, don't forget, our live show in Boston's coming up on April 18th. So if you're in the Massachusetts area or New England in general, you want to drive to Boston to see us, it's on April 18th. You can go to our website, RaidersOfTheLostPodcast.com, and there's a clickable button to access tickets that you can buy online, or just go to the description of this episode. There'll be a link there to purchase tickets. Let's get those seats sold. There are plenty left. April 18th, everybody.
Almost 3 weeks away.
In Cambridge, kids.
We're going to be in Cambridge, guy.
What was the first watch you had this week, Anthony?
My first watch was also the most controversial of the week. With Late Night with the Devil, which I talked about briefly on our last episode of Movie News. Now, we all know that this film used AI in the film. If nobody's really familiar with how much AI was used.
Can you give us a background?
So, there were a couple of title cards used in the film to transition from like the TV show that's being broadcast and filmed, taking a commercial break and transitioning back into the show. So, the film did a really cool setup of... It's basically kind of found footage-y, but not like handshake-y found footage. It's like a blend of the narrative happening behind the scenes of the production of the live TV show, which is a late show. And then they would use the actual footage from the recording like live as well. So it was a cool little back and forth of, and they even changed the cameras and the color grading and the overall grading of the images to make it look like super digital and like almost like VCR quality. You know what I mean? And it worked really well because then when the show went to commercial break, they would cut to, it looked like either film cameras or just great quality digital cameras. And then it was just high quality resolution, modern contemporary cameras for those shots. So it was cool to see the back and forth of like the VCR cutting to high quality. And so whenever the show did come back on air, they did a title card like welcome back or like it's spooky season. And those three title cards were made with AI. And obviously, it's been a huge uproarious thing, and it sparked a big debate about AI. And that being said, I mean, we talked about it in our movie news. I don't think AI is good to be used in films, but it is a tool that all sorts of creatives can use. And it was a mistake for the filmmakers to use it. This was made 2 years ago, and people were just kind of like having fun with AI and just experimenting with it. So I think that they just made a mistake, and we shouldn't destroy their careers for it. That being said, I gave the film 4.5 stars.
Wow.
And I thought it was really fun, exciting, really great slow burn and slow build into just an insane final act that was just absolutely floored me. And David S. Melchian did a fantastic job leading this film. This could have been a big breakout for him. I think that it's still going to be big for his career, even with the polarizing reception. But I will say, if there wasn't AI images in this film, everybody would be saying it's the best horror film in years. 100%. I stand by that. That's how good the movie is.
I got to check it out because a lot of humans worked on the movie. And of course, you know, that term slippery slope, if it starts with three images, how far does it go with AI? But I think a lot of people need to realize that AI has been used in production for several years now. I think people would be shocked to find out how much previs, storyboarding, or just in so many departments, whether it's ADRing and sound and lighting and all kinds of departments in filmmaking and television in many industries are using AI and have been using AI, but now it's just become such a hot button topic. It's now it's in our face. Like you always say, AI wasn't invented last year during the strikes. It was invented. It started years ago.
It's been rolled out.
It's been rolling up. But now last year was the big, let's have a coming up party of AI, basically.
And I looked into the film. They had a whole graphics team that actually did a significant amount of work on the film. There's a big photo montage early in the film to get us up to speed with the character and the world. Dozens and dozens and dozens of photoshopped images that the team did work on. So it's nobody's job was taken. They did not replace actual people with these images. And so in that case, it was really used as a tool. And the graphics team even did work on the images. So nobody lost their jobs in this. And they weren't using AI to replace human beings.
Scary stuff.
That being said, I do think it's, if you want to say, don't go see this movie, don't go see it. But it is unfortunately getting review bombed heavily on Letterboxd and IMDb. Hundreds of people are giving it half-star ratings, one-star ratings, one-stars on Letterboxd, on IMDb. So, unfortunately, it's caused a big rift, and a lot of people are basically attacking the film. And I've read some of them, and most people are saying, like, oh, this AI, the visual effects look terrible with this AI bogus footage. And I was like, "That's you didn't even see the film. They didn't use AI for the visual effects." So, a lot of people just review bombing it, I think, is never a good thing.
It's controversial.
Yeah.
Controversial movie.
Because a lot of people worked on the film, and they did a fantastic job.
At least they were transparent.
Yeah. Yeah.
They came out before the film's release and said there's three AI images.
Yeah.
They didn't hide it. You know, at least they were transparent about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get into my first watch of the week, which was, speaking of VHS or VCR, would you say, VHS?
VCR.
VCR aesthetic and the quality. Yeah. I watched this movie called Kung Fury. And I gave it 3 stars. Did I talk about it recently on the show? It was my, in an upcoming episode, it's my recommended,
recommended
streaming recommendation. Yeah. So Kung Fury is like this crazy, absurdist action short film. It's 32 minutes long, written, directing, and starring David Sandberg. It's about this cop from the future who has to fight an enemy from the past. It's basically a love letter to corny 80s movies because it's so absurd. He plays a kung fu cop who goes back in time to try to kill Hitler, but he goes too far back in time, and he's with the dinosaurs and Vikings, and then goes forward in time to fight Hitler. But it's crazy because, let me give you my review so you kind of understand what this movie
when
is.
When did it come out?
2015. Are you interested in watching a kung fu cop shoot two handguns simultaneously at an arcade machine monster while standing on top of a Ferrari that is flying in the air after hitting a jump going 100 miles per hour? Then Kung Fury is for you. That's basically a shot in the movie. He's on top of a Ferrari after he hits a jump going 100 miles per hour shooting two handguns at an arcade monster machine. That's the movie. He talks like this the whole time. It's so fun and insanely campy. As well as, you know, filmed with modern cameras, but with this heavy VCR, VHS quality effect put over the entire image. It's really terrific. A lot of pretty solid visual effects for such a low-budget film. Came out in 2015. They actually shot a sequel to this in 2018.
Yeah, I'm looking it up because we were talking about it yesterday, how they shot a sequel to Kung Fury with Michael Fassbender and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
And it was never released, and they shot it in 2018, 2019.
They filmed it, and I think they finished the movie, but they just can't release it. They're in a post-production lawsuit scandal where some of the investors, I think, are suing the filmmakers over, I don't know, I couldn't find any details about it, but that movie was shot with Michael Fassbender in 2018 in a major role in the movie, which is ridiculous because this is like a cult classic. You could say it's, again, only 32 minutes. I rented it on Amazon to watch it, but it's so goddamn fun. I mean, the martial arts and stunts are actually pretty terrific in this movie, given the budget. The visual effects are campy as hell, but solid. I mean, he's riding the back of a Tyrannosaurus Rex at one point. He's shooting tons of machine guns. It's crazy. It's absurd. He has to kill Hitler, who's also like a kung fu expert or wants to be a kung fu expert. It's absurd as hell, but so funny. It's an 80s love letter to those campy 80s action movies. I can't recommend it enough. If you just want to laugh at something and have a good time, and if you like the 80s movies, I recommend it. It's just a silly movie.
I found a quote from Michael Fassbender from Josh Horowitz's show, who asked what's going on with Kung Fury 2, and Fassbender only said, I think there's just some legal wranglings going on there, but hopefully it will see the light of day one day.
I hope so.
Yeah.
It'd be really cool, because Fassbender is an awesome actor, and for him to do that in 2018, which means
when he was peaking,
he's top of the world. He's one of the best actors out there, and that's how funny it is. That's how good this movie is for how silly it is.
Damn, it's too bad.
And
I want to see it now.
You should watch it. It's a blast. Again, it's only a half hour. It's not a huge commitment or anything. 3 stars.
Three stars. All right, let's get into the Letterboxd top 4 of 5 of our amazing fans. First up, we have our buddy Archie Owen. His bio says, I saw Cillian Murphy's balls in IMAX, James Devaney. I'm not making that up.
That's his bio?
That's his bio. Amazing.
I can't remember what episode is that from.
Oppenheimer.
It could have been any episode. We talked about Oppenheimer maybe.
That's true. Yeah. I think we were talking about people having trouble with nudity and Poor Things or something like that. Like before maybe. It came out.
Yeah, maybe something like that. And yeah, saw Cillian Murphy's balls in IMAX.
All right, so Archie's top 4 is The Good and the Bad and the Ugly.
Hell yeah.
Amazing pick. I might throw that in my top 4 soon. Pulp Fiction. Lord of the Rings. Guess which one?
Fellowship.
Return of the King.
Return of the King.
You bozo. Don't you even know Archie?
I don't know
anything about Archie, man.
Yeah.
You call yourself a friend.
I know.
And then he has a Godfather film. Which Godfather film is it?
Part 2.
Correct.
My man.
Okay, you are friends.
So the thing with Archie is clearly he's a film boy.
Oh, film boys.
I love that list.
Recently, when he sent this, Archie watched The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, Operation Fortune, the Guy Ritchie film, Elemental, and John Wick Chapter 4. All right, next up, we have Zach Nastatos. Sorry, bud, I messed it up. I failed you. His bio says, after I see a movie, I like to go get a piece of pie and talk about it. It's sort of a tradition I have. Do you like to get pie after you see a good movie?
I like that.
I think I know what movie that's from.
That's,
I think that's After Hours.
No, I think it's something else.
Do you like to get pie after watching a movie? Okay, I'm Googling it. Do you have a guess?
I can't think of it, but it sounds so familiar.
Oh, I got the wrong Arquette sister. It's True Romance.
Oh, fuck it.
I knew when Arquette said it. Oh, no, Slater said it. Or one of them said it.
Slater says it. Yeah.
Man.
That's his thing.
I knew there was an Arquette in there somewhere.
He goes to movies and gets pie, and then his boss.
He watches Kung Fu movies, yeah.
And he watches and gets pie. And his boss sets him up with the sex worker.
True Romance is literally, it's Quentin Tarantino before he was a filmmaker. Honestly, watching Kung Fu movies alone in a theater.
Getting pie at a diner.
His beautiful dream girl comes and walks up to him. And then also obsessed with Elvis.
Yep.
It's very, just like, that's like Tarantino, Christian Slater's character. All right, next up, Zach's top 4 are The Departed.
Hell yeah.
Ooh, finally, we don't see many of these. The Bridge on the River Kwai, great film from David Lean. If you like Lawrence of Arabia, check out this film. David Lean is the GOAT of the epics. And then we have Once Upon a Time in Hollywood by Quentin Tarantino. With the cool cover. It looks like a novel cover. Like an old novel. I love it.
Well, is it the actual cover of the novel?
No, it's not. It is not.
It's not.
Or maybe it is. I don't know.
Let me see. Let me put my glasses on. No, that's not it.
And then, at number 4, we have Dazed and Confused! You know what this is right here?
It's a film boy.
Recently, this film boy has watched Annie Hall, Close Encounters, Dark Knight, and Bridge on the River Kwai. I have never seen such a film boy in my life. Film boy. Oh, man. All right, next up, we got Jason Rubb. Jason's top 4.
Let's see what you got.
Blade Runner, 2049.
Hell yeah.
Spider-Man Into Spider-Verse.
Oh, interesting.
Which I think is superior to Across.
I think so, too. I like Into better than Across.
Then we got E.T.
That's a great pick.
Back-to-back Spielberg Alien movies here. And then Lady Bird.
Where's the back-to-back Spielberg Lady?
Because we just had Close Encounters in the last one.
Oh, I thought you meant in his list. I'm like, you definitely just said Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man is an Alien Spielberg film.
That's why I was confused.
Yeah.
Because it's not.
Try to keep up.
Well, maybe if you add more specificity to what you're saying. Words matter, Anthony.
I just said Close Encounters 30 seconds ago.
No, but then you said back-to-back Spielberg movies after you listed a Spielberg movie off.
Uh-huh.
So I get the confusion. So I was expecting another Spielberg movie to be named after E.T.
But you see, what happened is before I said Jason's top 4, I was on Zach's top 4.
No, no, but I'm talking about the wording of your phrase. You're going through a list of movies, and you said a Spielberg movie, and then you said, oh, here we go, back-to-back Spielberg movies, which insinuates that there's about to be a Spielberg movie said after E.T.
Let me ask you this. I said 4 movies in a row.
Yeah.
2 of them were Spielberg Alien movies. How could I not be more clear?
What do you mean? What are you talking about? You did Spider-Man, then you did E.T.
So, technically, I said Close Encounters, Annie Hall, then Blade Runner 2049, and Spider-Man.
I know, and then, no, but then you went Spider-Man, then you went E.T., and then you said, this is the sentence that came out of your mouth, oh, we got back-to-back Spielberg movies here, which means that...
It's a back-to-back Spielberg alien movie.
Exactly, exactly, which means that...
Words matter, James.
I know, exactly. So you're proving my point that I was expecting to hear another Spielberg alien movie after E.T. because you were on a list. You didn't say two people in a row. You didn't say two people in a row with Spielberg alien movies. You said, oh, here we go, another alien Spielberg movie. And then you said not a nit, then you said something else. So I think everyone listening is on my side.
I wouldn't be so certain about that.
Oh.
Sorry, Jason. He's probably loving it. So, and again, back-to-back Spielberg alien movies on these top fours.
That's better.
Better.
Better phrasing.
Better.
A little more clear. Still a little confusing, but more clear.
Okay, I'm glad that you're getting it.
I'm just trying to...
I just want to make sure you're up to speed.
I am trying to be in the perspective of a listener. That's who I am. I'm trying to honor them. They've chosen me to represent them, Anthony. With your bullshit.
Who elected you?
They did.
They did? When was this election?
Many years ago.
Many years ago.
Yes.
Wow.
Several.
It's funny. I never heard of this election.
It was a private one.
All right. Recently,
closed doors.
Recently, Jason has watched No Hard Feelings, Past Lives, Dark Knight, and Field of Dreams.
Hell yeah.
All right. Next up, we have Brooke Bearloker, B-Bear 97 on Letterboxd.
B-Bear.
Oh my God. Another David Lean film, Lawrence of Arabia.
Hell yeah.
Top four. Then we got Sicario.
Yep.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Mm-hmm.
And Inglourious Bastards.
Wow.
We got Film Girl.
Film Girl.
Film Girl.
Film Girls.
Oh, sorry, Jason. You're a film boy.
We got so many film boys and film girls today. I love it.
Film Girls. Also, this film girl has watched The Martian, Catch Me If You Can, The Menu, and Amadeus.
What a streak. Taste, what a taste in cinema.
What a streak.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
I like it. She only watches bangers.
Only bangers. Also, 4.5 stars for Amadeus. Great rating. Great film. Glad you liked it.
This is great.
Fantastic stuff. Fantastic stuff. All right. Our final top four of today is Reagan Poda, Putting My Degrees to Good Use, All the Way in the UK.
Hell yeah.
All right. First up, we have La N.
Hell yeah.
Classic.
Amazing.
Fantastic Mr. Fox, which is your favorite?
My favorite Wes Anderson film.
Yes. In the Mood for Love. Great Wong Kar Wai film.
Wow.
And then we got... From David Fincher, 7.
What a list!
Film boy. Let's go. I gotta say, I'm excited for 7 in IMAX, and we might be working on a 7 episode very soon.
I think that's a good idea, Anthony.
Recently, Reagan's watched Jurassic Park, The Little Mermaid, Ariel's Beginning, so Little Mermaid Origins, Dumb Money, 2 stars, and Howl's Moving Castle, 4.5 stars. Love it. Great picks.
Wow, we got such great listeners with great taste.
They all have fantastic taste, I gotta say. I'm constantly impressed, constantly. But I'm more impressed. I'm almost as impressed as with yours, but you only watch 2 movies a week, so.
I got things going on, man.
Got things going on.
I have 4 this week.
Whoa.
4.5.
Cinephile James.
4.5.
Cinephile over here, 4.5 films. Whoa, take it easy, man. Slow down with that. Watches. Just find some more time for other things, man. Life's not just about movies.
Well,
I mean,
17 movies a day over here, Anthony.
How many have you watched this year?
This year?
I am at 70 this year.
I'm at 30? Yeah, 30 this year, I think.
Nice. That's cute.
That's cute, he says.
So, like, once a week?
it's March freaking 22nd, dude.
Yeah, we're almost into April. You've only watched 30 movies. Catch up, bro.
It's a movie every 3 days-ish.
You have a movie podcast.
I know.
Try watching more movies.
It's not like we're doing 20 movies a week on the podcast.
That's true.
Like, I don't have to watch 20 movies a week just because I have a movie podcast, Anthony. I watch like 4 a week. That's serviceable. It's plenty because I can watch movies about what we're talking about, and then I get a couple in there for me, or I go to the cinema and enjoy it. Some weeks I watch more, some weeks I watch less. Listen, not everyone has to watch 17 movies a day, Anthony.
I don't
watch
that many.
Goodness.
What are you going to watch next at the cinema?
I have no idea.
You should watch Late Night with the Devil.
Well, actually, I just got tickets to Dune for my third screening of it.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
So that'll but I'll probably see something before then because that's not till early April.
Are you going to IMAX?
Yeah, 70 mil.
Fuck yeah. Nice. All right, well, my next watch was actually based on a classic novel from William Golding, The Lord of the Flies, directed by Peter Brook. This came out in 1963. This is like really cool adaptation of the novel. It's all black and white, and if you're not familiar with the story, it's about a bunch of little boys get shipwrecked on an island, and then they band together to try and survive, and they're divided by tribalism and politics and just human behavior. It's such a great story, such a great concept. The book's fantastic. Everybody reads it in school, although it's very long. This is a solid adaptation of the novel. I think the child actors did a good job. It's a little cringe at times. This is 60 years old. I mean, this is obviously a very small budget film. That being, when you watch it with that context and you keep your expectations modest, it's actually enjoyable. I gave it 4 stars. It's just crazy what happens with the kids. They start off with like order and, they all are banded together. They're like, we're going to survive. We're together. We're a community. Everybody has a job. Everybody has a goal, an assignment. And then all these divisions start happening. These problems start occurring and conflicts. And then eventually there's a rival to, they elect a leader and, Ralph, and Ralph is like a really great stoic, calm, cool-headed leader. But his rival, Jack, is the biggest antagonist and forms his own gang. You've seen elements of the film in story and other adaptations, whether it be TV shows or movies, because this is like that. This is the movie where if you have the conch, you can speak. That's where this movie's from. And you see that theme is played out multiple times in other things. Lord of the Flies, it's a really cool movie. I gave it 4 stars. It's not really that well liked. It's got pretty average reviews, but I think they did a very good job. It's a cool movie. It's got a fantastic ending. I loved it.
Nice, bro. All right. My watch next was, well, we can talk about the two we did watch parties with.
Yeah.
So we put on Ricky Stenicki first. We were trying to watch it, and I think there's like 15 of us, and we made it maybe 30 minutes in, and then we paused it, and we were all saying to each other, how can we sit through this? I couldn't sit through it anymore, honestly. I think we all just agreed that it was a watch that we weren't going to get through.
I know some people were liking it, but I just didn't find anything funny about it.
I can't believe that a director, it's Peter Farrelly, who made a Best Picture-winning movie. Obviously, Green Book's a controversial pick for Best Picture. He made a movie that won Best Picture, and then he made this, and I couldn't believe it. It looks like a commercial on green screen, or it looks like a commercial shot on the volume. The lighting is just not great. The filmmaking's just very basic. It's very corporate looking. It looks like a Colgate commercial or something.
Yeah, it looked like a Burger King ad.
Like a Chevron ad. It just did not look good at all.
And on top of that, even a lot of raunchy comedies, they have characters that are like, you'll have like a guy who's like, you know, not making like the best decisions, but their intentions are good. You know what I mean? They're not like shitty people, but they're obviously just like need to be taught lessons sometimes.
Yeah.
In this movie, you have 3 guys who have been lying to their wives and families for years, lying to their faces, getting out of really important events like a baby shower for your own baby, and who knows how many other important familial events.
Well, missing the birth of a child.
Yeah, missing the birth just so they could go out and party. They're just very bad people. Like, to be lying to your wives like that for that many years, to lie to your partners, I was like, why would we even want to watch a movie with these guys?
Yeah, I get that. And the script is just bad. I didn't laugh once. Maybe like a chuckle here. It just wasn't funny. It just wasn't a good movie. It was just looked like it was just phoned in by everybody in the department. Everyone in like who made the movie looked like it was an Amazon production. You don't have to worry about box office. Just like, oh, let's make a movie. Because we gotta hit the quotas, it just doesn't look good. It's not funny. We couldn't finish it. There were 15 of us. No one was having a good time.
I will say John Cena committed to it, and he went out. He went all out.
True,
on
yeah.
It.
I'll give
so
him that.
Gotta respect him. He put himself out there, and I think it's commendable. And he made the movie somewhat tolerable when he was in it. But even that, his the comedy didn't even work with him.
Yeah.
You wanted it to. I wanted to laugh at him, but it was just like, just didn't quite hit. I think this movie, the thing is like, and you said it really perfectly while we were watching it, a comedy, it needs to be its funniest in like the first half hour. That's where it really needs to.
Every comedy.
Like, that, it really needs to hit the audience with its best jokes to reel the audience in so that the story can unfold. So the first 30 minutes of a comedy is vital. And this first 30 minutes had no actual comedy. And so we were just like, none of us were feeling it. We just turned it off and we were like, let's just watch Roadhouse.
I can't believe it's a 2.7 on Letterboxd.
It's getting, yeah. I mean, some people are liking it. A lot of people, I mean,
we didn't finish it, I'll say that, but I was having such a bad time with this movie that I turned it off, which we seldom do. And there was 15 of us, and we all agreed that we were turning this movie off.
It was a universal decision to turn it off.
Because we all paused, and we were all just like, what is going on in this movie? This is like one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
It was really boring, too.
Yeah, it was very boring. I think everyone was just getting tuned out, and we were trying to force ourselves to keep watching it, but 15 of us all agreed, let's put on something else. And we put on Roadhouse, which I actually enjoyed. I enjoyed Roadhouse. I gave this a 3-star rating. And my review of it on Letterboxd is going to be, it's a slow start and the tone is odd, but Jake in the fight scene saved this one. We just did a review of this on the show. We did a main episode. We did reviews of Roadhouse as well as Immaculate, two new releases. The first half of the episode is all Roadhouse. Second half of the episode is all Immaculate. It was a lot of fun to break it up like that. We used to do episodes like that, but I mean, with new releases, it's a good thing to do, I think. And I enjoyed Roadhouse for the most part. It's silly. Like I said, it is a slow start. But Jake's awesome. Jake commits to this role. The fight scenes are excellent. We broke down how they visually achieve this sort of new look with this thing called an ABCD pass, where they film the fight sequences and the fight choreo four times and the punches and kicks, everything four times, four different ways to make it look like you're actually punching somebody in the face as realistically as possible.
Without having to cut away.
Yeah, versus stacking punches and having actors a few inches away from their target of what they're aiming for. And I think that visually, the fight scenes were excellent and unique. There were some things here and there that, you know, might have looked like a green screen. I think overall the movie relied too much on blue screens for bigger set pieces. But I had a good time. I mean, it's a silly movie. Like we talked about in the episode, it's not like the original Roadhouse is this all-time classic film. It's a guilty pleasure, sure, but it's not a great, great, great movie. It's got a lot of cheesy components to it.
Also a 2.7 on Letterboxd.
Just like this one has. But this one was way more enjoyable and much more watchable than Ricky Stenicki for me. And I think Jake, he's awesome. And Conor McGregor, I had a good time with him and his caricature of himself on there, which was pretty hysterical and absurd at times. But I enjoyed Roadhouse compared to Ricky Stenicki for sure.
I gave it 3.5 stars, and I wrote, there was a great movie in there somewhere. An odd tone and slow first half, underwhelmed, but a pretty wild second half salvaged the film. Keep your expectations low, and it's a pretty fun time. It was a strange tonally, but it ended up working by the end of the film. It was a pretty fun movie when you shut your brain off. This one was like, obviously not that great of a story, just pretty much run-of-the-mill. We've seen it 1,000 times, but it had an edginess to it. It had a lightness to it, and it was overall pretty enjoyable. So I gave it 3.5. I was like, you know what? It was fine. It was fine. It had some good jokes. It had some good comedy. It had some good fights. Conor McGregor was absolutely ridiculous, but it worked for me. And Jake was Jake. And then it got pretty dark second half that I enjoyed more. And so it took a turn, got a little better. Overall, better experience than Ricky Stenicki.
Agree. Yeah. I concur. What is your next watch, Anthony?
Oh, my next watch is a great Sam Mendes film starring the great Tom Hanks and Paul Newman. Road to Perdition.
Freaking knew that was what you watch. Because I like to play this game. I try to hear the audio from Anthony's TV in his room. And his door's closed. And I try to figure out what movies he's watching. Sometimes it's very easy, but sometimes it's hard. But I heard the music. I'm like, wait, is this... At first, it sounded just like Shawshank's music. Same composer. But then I'm like, wait. But it's not Shawshank Redemption because that's not the opening scene. And I've only seen Road to Perdition once.
Oh, really?
I saw it a couple years ago for the first time. It's really, really excellent,
I thought we watched it when we were younger.
Maybe we watched it when we were kids. I don't know. Maybe, I just don't
remember. I've seen it a bunch of times.
But I saw it as an adult, like, 2 years ago. And it was really, really fucking good. But then that was my guess in the back of my head. And then I asked you the next day. I'm like, what were you watching last night? He's like, Road to Perdition. I was like, I fucking knew it. I knew it, man.
I think we might have seen this in theaters with Dad.
Maybe.
I remember because I remember seeing it in theaters, I think, as a kid. But I've this is maybe my fifth or sixth watch of the film. Again, I'm 34 years old, guys. I've seen movies many times. Road to Perdition is fantastic. It's a great Sam Mendes film. Really well shot by Conrad Hall, who also shot American Beauty for Sam Mendes, but this is their final film together before Sam started working with the GOAT, who is Roger Deakins. But Conrad Hall, really fantastic cinematographer. He's shot Cool Hand Luke, Butch Cassidy, Sundance Kid, Marathon Man with Dustin Hoffman, which is a really visually stunning film. So extremely talented cinematographer, and this is one of his best-looking movies. This could be his best-looking movie. It's a beautiful noir with a great amount of style, and it just felt like it was a callback to the film noirs of the 40s and 50s. And you don't see the movies like this anymore getting made just because it's such a specific tone and a specific style. And on top of that, you have... Oh, it won the Oscar for Best Cinematography. Yep. On top of that, you have the most restrained performance from Tom Hanks I've ever seen, in a good way. He plays a quiet, stoic mob killer. He kills people for the mob. Paul Newman plays not necessarily the mob, but like it is a criminal outfit, and he is a muscle for Paul Newman's leader. And he's subdued. He's very quiet. He's stern, but he's also extremely strong and intimidating, and that's something that I had never seen Tom Hanks as intimidating before seeing this film, you know what I mean? But he exudes that really well, and other characters, when they see him enter a room, it's like, oh my God, and you feel it in his presence, and it's something that Tom had never tapped into until this film, and he did a wonderful job with it. And it's interesting to see him taking the charm down and pulling the charisma out of his, sucking it out of his performance, and it works, because if Tom Hanks being more Tom Hanks, it wouldn't have worked, so... He did a phenomenal job in this film, and Paul Newman, I believe, received an Oscar nomination, his final one for this film. But it's a great story about Tom Hanks' son witnesses him and Daniel Craig, who plays Paul Newman's son, who's another gangster, murdering other people in the criminal outfit for betraying the family, basically. And so since the kid witnessed this, the mob orders to have the whole family massacred. Really, it's because Daniel Craig, who plays a spoiled brat of Paul Newman's son, angry, jealous of the connection that Tom Hanks has to Paul Newman, he basically lashes out in multiple ways, and he thinks that since the kid saw them kill someone, the kid has to die. And so since they start this chain of events, Paul Newman's like, his whole family has to die. And so then Tom Hanks takes his surviving son on the run to try and evade the mob, and also Jude Law plays the assassin hired to track them down and kill them. And this is one of my favorite Jude Law performances of all time. He's fucking incredible in this film. It's fantastic. You've never seen Jude Law like this before. And man, he's just one of those villains that if he maybe had a little more screen time, he'd be up there on all-time lists.
It's tough to make him look ugly. It is. Make him bad.
Yeah.
But they do a good job.
That's a good point. Yeah. They like made him look super bald. And his teeth are disgusting.
Yeah.
But still, it's like, it's Jude Law, those baby blues. Fantastic film. If you haven't seen Road to Perdition, check it out now. It's on Max. That's where, no, it's on Amazon Prime. That's where I watched it. Came out in 2002. Old movie. 20 years old.
Old movie. All right.
22 years old. Shit.
My next watch was a film from 1996 out of Scotland. Danny Boyle's Trainspotting, starring Ewan McGregor. I haven't seen this movie in, I want to say, like maybe 10 years. I haven't seen it in quite a while. And when it comes to drug films, it's one of the best all time. And it sort of has this great energy in the ballpark of Goodfellas for a lot of time. It's like Goodfellas with Requiem for a Dream. If they had a baby, that's kind of like this movie in a lot of ways. But it's also, it gets very abstract and very creative when it comes to drug sequences and obviously going through withdrawals with the main characters. Ewan McGregor is just absolutely terrific in this role. You know, he's a star, and you can see he had it at such a young age. He carries this film with just the presence of just a great, great actor. You know, he's an all-timer for sure, and people love Ewan McGregor. And Renton's a great character. He's very memorable. And it's not an easy film to watch. There's a lot of dark and disturbing things in this film, like when the baby dies because everyone's just getting high and they neglect the baby and the baby dies. It's really sad. And, you know, addiction is a massive problem for a lot of people. You know, heroin is a terrible, terrible thing. But it sort of does this interesting thing with the story where it shows a sort of romantic view of heroin and the pleasure from it, which a lot of movies don't usually do. A lot of movies usually show, they'll show someone getting high and feeling pleasure, but this movie really taps into the pleasure quality of a drug. You know, it's picture the best orgasm you've ever had, multiply it by 1,000, and you're not even close. That's basically what they're insinuating in this movie. That Renton says something like that.
Beats any dick in Scotland.
Beats any meat needle or something like that. Meat injection. Beats any meat injection in Scotland. But then it obviously gets dark and it shows how it destroys lives and kills people.
What's interesting about the film is, like you said, it is very Goodfellas-esque, and it's actually quite, it's just entertaining as hell in the first 20 minutes. And then it does take a dark turn to show, because I think Danny Boyle did a great job of illustrating the high at first with the filmmaking. The high, the brilliance, the inventiveness, the creativity.
Incredible opening. The opening's a chase scene with great music.
It's just super fun and entertaining and funny and ridiculous. And then the second half of the film is like, it's the down, it's the tragedy, it's the, oh, this is a horrible thing. And it just, the movie turns and makes that big shift in a big way.
But Renton's a really interesting lead character. And even though we've seen so many films with drug addicts and sometimes they hit a lot of tropes, Renton's a complete original. You know, he stands out when it comes to characters going through addiction withdrawals. He might be the best character in cinema for this kind of role. And I think just Ewan's terrific. Danny Boyle is such a fantastic director. And, you know, it does take a dark turn. And then, you know, Renton gets clean at points and he goes back to heroin at points. And then fucks over his friends. And I haven't seen Trainspotting 2. I still haven't watched that movie.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen it.
I sort of don't want to because I love how this film ends. It ends so ambiguous where they all get this big score by accident and then they make like $18,000, £18,000. And then Renton steals all the money from his friends and just walks away. And that's the end of the movie. But this movie's so ironical. It's sort of like that approach that Requiem for a Dream takes where, why is a society that's full of medication, people taking drugs constantly for different ailments, different things they need, psychological, physical, but then there's specific drugs that people deem as dangerous or a lower kind of human, and whereas massive populations of countries all over the world are deeply medicated.
Approved
domestic
drugs.
Medication, yeah. You know what I mean? Domestic drug addicts, it's a term, something that they use in that film. So they take that ironic approach. Same thing with Requiem for a Dream with the mother, who's basically a domestic drug addict, constantly getting prescribed medication from doctors and big pharma. How is that so different than someone who's finding drugs on the street? Obviously, there are differences, but at the same time, they're pretty similar.
I mean, that movie's more relevant than ever because the opioid crisis is more significant than it has been before.
Probably, yeah.
From prescription drugs, yeah.
It's a great film, though.
Also, Kelly MacDonald's in it.
Yeah, yeah. She's great.
Early role of hers. Johnny Lee Miller's great.
Johnny Lee's great, yeah. But yeah, it's an awesome, awesome movie.
Awesome sauce. What did you rate it?
4.5.
Nice.
It's not quite a 5, but it's still 4.5, which is 9 out of 10, which is absurdly good.
Yeah, Danny Boyle's awesome.
Excellent, excellent film.
Great Scottish movie.
It really is.
All right, next up, I have an Orson Welles film that it's one of those movies that like you know about, but you just never watch it forever. And I've known about this movie, and it's just one of those things that slip your minds, and it's The Trial, which is an adaptation of the Franz Kafka novel. If you've seen any kind of Kafka-esque film, Kafka adaptation, or read any Kafka books or short stories, you know how absurdist it is, how insane it is, and how brilliant it is, his writing is. And this is just an incredible adaptation of the story of The Trial. I gave this 5 stars. And I wrote, a brilliantly executed waking nightmare of a film that would have made Kafka proud. This came out all the way back in 1962, starring Anthony Perkins. Anthony Perkins is phenomenal. He plays this just run-of-the-mill guy who works at a huge office, who one day, a couple of police officers come into his apartment arresting him. And when he asks what he's charged with or charged with doing, they won't give him an answer. So he's arrested, he's put on trial, and he's charged with a crime he doesn't know what he did. So the whole story is about the idea of the judiciary system and law and order and what is law, what's against the law, these ideas of like who defines what a crime is. And the movie is just this huge surrealist nightmare. And watching this movie, I can see how so many other films have lifted from it in terms of transitioning from location to location with not making any sense. And just visually, there's so many surrealist qualities, abstract qualities. Like he walks up to it's like a dream where the most ridiculous things that could possibly be happening, they seem normal to you in a dream, right? You could be walking from an exterior and you walk into like a fridge and it just makes sense. You don't question it. That's what this film is like. Anthony Perkins just goes from place to place, transitioning, literally just walking into a door and he's in this giant, huge office building. Or then he goes into a supposed courtroom and everything just is normal for him. It's like, that's the brilliance of it. He acts normally because it's just like a huge dream. And no matter how much it doesn't make sense to an audience, to the characters, everything seems to be making sense. And another great example is like the trial room is just this huge hall with dozens and dozens of people, and the justices are standing on this altar with a table, but there's really like no way to get up there, so Anthony Perkins has to like climb up it in order to like even get onto the courtroom altar to defend himself. So many things like that, and abstract ideas and really crazy motifs permeate the film constantly. And visually, it's one of the most incredible films I've ever seen. Orson Welles and his DP were just incredible craftsmen. So much ingenuity and creativity in the cinematography and lighting, set design, huge, huge sets, hundreds and hundreds upon hundreds of extras. There's a great shot where he's approaching a door, and the door's normal, and then Orson Welles cuts to a close-up of his hand turning the doorknob, and then it cuts back to the wide shot. But now the door is 60 feet tall, and Anthony Perkins is tiny right at the bottom of it. There's just so many visual elements that are just like, my mouth was just agape and my eyes were just like enamored with what I was seeing. It was absolutely unbelievable. And I just feel like ashamed that I had waited this long to see this film. And I can't wait to see it again. It's insane.
I'm ashamed in you as well, man.
It was absolutely bonkers. Absolutely bonkers.
How many got left?
One left.
I also have one left.
Wow. We have so much in common.
I, for my final watch, put on the brilliant film Man of Steel from nice. Zack Snyder, which is an incredible film. I haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen it since we did an episode on it like 2.5-3 years ago. And it's just brilliant because I wanted to watch it because of the stunt work. And we're filming some stuff tomorrow that we kind of took some notes from, specifically the fight sequence in front of the Sears building, the IHOP, and when he's fighting Feyora.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to do some stuff from that. And at first I was watching it for research, but I was like, I'm going to watch the whole fucking thing because it was great. And so it was really incredible movie. I love Man of Steel. I always have since I saw it in IMAX back in 2013 IMAX. With you. And that's a movie that I've always adored. And, you know, what could have been with the DC is just such a disappointment because they start off so strong with this film. It's a divisive movie, even though it's excellent.
It's a three on Letterboxd.
Sad. Really sad because it's really incredible. I've never seen anything quite like it at that point when it comes to the combat, with superhero combat. You know, Zack Snyder brought a very anime quality to practical filmmaking with CGI, but in terms of the fights, we never seen anything like that with superhuman speed and strength on that level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that small town fight is just a great example of that. The imagery is incredible. His first flight is just goosebumps the entire time. And I really love it. I love the mythos that goes with it, and Zack Snyder's, you love or hate the guy, especially superhero movies, because I think a lot of people don't understand that he's dissecting superhero movies. That's what he does. He takes a superhero and he dissects them. He makes Superman kill. He makes Batman kill. You know, the Watchmen franchise obviously was dissecting comics, even though he uses an opportunity to dissect superhero movies. Alan Moore was obviously dissecting comic books, graphic novels. But Zack took that approach. And I think that's the thing that people maybe don't understand with him. So they sometimes don't like his movie. They don't like that he makes Superman kill. They don't like that he makes Batman kill. But I think that, you know, these characters have been around for so long, I don't think it's that big of a deal. And I think people just need to just let it happen, because I think he's a great artist and great visual storyteller. And he did a great job with Man of Steel. And I do like Batman vs. Superman. The director's cut is better. But, you know, I just get disappointed sometimes that what could have been, and how they kind of figured it out with the Zack Snyder Justice League. They sort of rebounded from some bad films in a bad couple of years, and they could have continued that story, which is unfortunate that they're not. Because he did, I think, figure it out in the end what to do with all these characters. But it is what it is. We'll never get that. Maybe in a parallel universe. But I love Man of Steel, and we've talked about it glowingly so many times on the show. Go check out our episode. Not much needs to be said else.
There are a lot of angry reviews on
Letterboxd. That's what I mean. People get super
like the bad reviews are like, they're really angry.
I don't know what they're so
like.
Upset.
They're seriously pissed off, man. Guys, you gotta relax, man. This is just a movie. Like, holy shit, Allura. But I like this movie. What'd you give it for a rating?
4.5.
Nice, dude. I love Man of Steel. Fantastic movie. I mean, the DCU started out better than the MCU did. Well, actually, no. Let me rephrase that. Aside from Iron Man.
Iron Man is the start of the MCU.
Aside from Iron Man, I'm just talking with the other solo movies. I think Man of Steel is better than the other solo movies.
I mean, Thor, sure. In First Avenger, sure. Yeah, I would say that.
Yeah.
But it didn't start better than the MCU.
No, it didn't. That was a mistake to say it that way.
Yeah.
But, yeah, MCU just always had the quality.
Had. Past tense.
I saw a TikTok of, like, the screenwriter for Ant-Man and the Wasp giving advice on writing. This morning, I was like, why is this guy even trying to give people advice on writing
screenplays? He's a screenwriter. You know, at the end of the day, he's a successful screenwriter.
All right. So, well, I mean,
you know, at the end of the day, he's written scripts that have been turned into movies, you know, at the end of the day.
All right. You're right. All right. My final watch of the week was Eyes Without a Face, which is one of the most incredible horror films I've ever seen in my life. I gave it 5 stars. This came out all the way in 1960. It's a French horror film from Georges Franju. This is absolutely phenomenal. It's about this girl who was in a car accident because of her father, who's a like madman surgeon, and her face was torn up and ruined. And so ever since then, he's been capturing and killing similarly looking women, taking off their faces and trying to mesh them into his daughter's face to get them to her body to accept the new flesh. I can't believe this movie was made in 1960, because it's just that concept was like insane to me. That sounds like something that would be made nowadays or like in the 90s, but back then, I can't believe they even did this. It's one of the most groundbreaking horror films I've ever seen. It's just a masterclass of tension, storytelling, and body horror. They were really pushing the envelope with this film. This would not have been able to play in America. And there's some really cool gore, and they got some stuff that even made me squirm. Like, there's some stuff in this that I was like, holy shit, they did a phenomenal job for the special effects they had in 1960. Cinematography is great. The story's perfect. It's a tight movie. It's not even 2 hours. It's 84 minutes. It's a short film, and it breezes by. Really fantastic film. Excellent characters. Really metaphorical, too, the idea of not having a face and what that does to your identity. Do you even feel like you're a person anymore? It also plays around with madness, and I think that there's just something about, like, having like an evil surgeon with a scalpel in his hand, that just makes your spine tingle. You know what I mean? There's just like something scary about that image and someone you're supposed to trust, but they turn out to be a murderer. It's just awful. It just plays on so many great themes, and I adored the film. It was really surprising. I've known about it for a couple of years. It's been on my watch list for a while, and then I decided to put it on because they have it on Max. And I was not disappointed. I actually want to watch it again pretty soon, because it was really, I think, that brilliant and that sensational. And it's just a groundbreaking piece of filmmaking. You can see how so many filmmakers drew inspiration from it, whether it be Jordan Peele with Get Out or Pedro Almodovar with The Skin I Live In. I'm sorry, I can't remember the director's name of Open Your Eyes. also, which was adapted as a Vanilla Sky from Cameron Crowe. The movies like that owe so much to this film. And this is just an incredible piece of horror.
Alejandro Amenábar.
Thank you, Amenábar. Amenábar. Nice. Did you have that in your head or did you just Google it?
Googled it.
I was like, wow, that was impressive.
So fast. Pretty good.
But I can't recommend this movie enough. For fans of horror, honestly, I think I might have this in my top 10 horror films of all time now.
Whoa!
Honestly.
Whoa!
I gotta watch it again, but I might put it in my top 10 horror films.
Wowzers. That is a crazy cool statement.
Like, you know, I had you watch Repulsion last year, and it was so phenomenal. It was just that good. As good as that. Like, the French were doing horror pretty well, pretty good back then.
Yeah,
they were hitting horror hard in the 60s.
Yeah, they took that very realistic approach and sort of just inserting you in the shoes so well of characters and just really weird, trippy stuff.
What do you think about an episode, the best horror films you've never seen?
That's a good idea.
Yeah, then we can throw that on, Repulsion on, a bunch of great foreign films, contemporary ones. Yeah, I think that'd be a fun episode to talk about.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Let's do that. Let's film that next.
The best horror films you've never seen.
Fuck yeah, man.
That's a great idea.
I love it.
We can make a pretty epic list, and I hope everyone watches it. I hope that, like, if you're a fan of horror and you're looking for something fresh, man.
That would be a good list. Audition would be a top 10.
Audition, my God. Yeah.
That movie's fucking insane.
Fucking A Audition. And then there will be someone in the comments like, everybody knows what Audition is, you idiots.
Not true at all.
You fucking idiots. Find a real job.
I've never met anyone that's heard of Audition.
Find a real hobby.
Anyways, is that all you got for movies?
That is all I have for movies.
I'm tapped out as well, man. I'm tapped out as well. I had a blast talking about you, about these movies.
About me?
About these movies with you, man.
You can talk about me.
Besides that bickering we had earlier where you just had horrible phrasing and I had to set you straight for the audience.
I didn't like your phrase.
Because remember, they elected me.
Emily Blunt over here.
I didn't like your phrase.
It was your phrase. I didn't like it.
Anyways. Allora. Thank you so much for tuning in to Raiders of Lost Podcast in Letterboxd number 43, I think. Wow, we've almost been doing Letterboxd Recap for a year.
Man, it goes by so fast.
It does go by so fast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Become a patron today at patreon.com/Raiders of Lost Podcast. Leave those 5-star ratings and reviews on Spotify and Apple Podcast. And take care, everybody.
See you next time.
Raiders of the Lost Podcast is a Mirror Image production. Sound mixing done by Jacob Kosler. Opening music by Chase Jackson.